This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, can a building change the way you think or feel? A new collaboration between architects and scientists may help answer that question. Join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a look at design and the mind. That's tomorrow at this time on Talk of the Nation. But now we look at new developments in California's recall battle. There's a final candidate count on the ballot, and the top candidates are getting advice about how to distinguish themselves from the other 134 names on the ballot. If you'd like to join the conversation as a voter, how much attention do you pay to the candidate's supporting cast? Call us at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us to talk about who's new behind the scenes in California is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Neil.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is pursuing both Democratic and Republican voters. He also has some high-profile advisors from both sides of the aisle, a former California governor, Republican Pete Wilson, and the legendary entrepreneur Warren Buffett. Talk a little bit with us about what they bring to his campaign.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Warren Buffett is he is a Democrat. He's from Nebraska, not from California. Doesn't live in California. But I guess the thinking is that if Warren Buffett is going to invest in Schwarzenegger's stocks, and obviously his investment prowess is well known, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a more serious candidate, more heft to him than is led to believe.
It's not just money that Warren Buffett would bring, and I'm not sure Arnold Schwarzenegger needs money.
No, it's not money at all. It's basically Buffett's role, as I understand it, is to help formulate and put together an economics team. Obviously, one of the questions is, how do you deal with the lingering budget deficit in California? And Buffett is there for that.
Mm-hmm. What are the potential risks or rewards for Mr. Schwarzenegger in giving such a high-profile role to former Governor Pete Wilson?
Well, there are tremendous risks. But let's talk about the rewards first. Obviously, Pete Wilson is the last Republican elected governor. He was elected in 1994. No Republican has won since then. He was also a two-term senator. So obviously, Pete Wilson and the people behind him, one would assume, know how to win statewide in California, which has been a problem for the Republican Party since Wilson left office. Having said that, obviously, Pete Wilson was the architect behind Proposition 184, the 187, the proposition in 1994 that basically barred any kind of services to undocumented and illegal immigrants, and the Latino community basically is furious at Pete Wilson. A lot of people say that the failure of the Republican Party in California is rested on the fact that Wilson was behind this proposition that alienated so many voters.
Does having famous advisors who will attract media attention on their own, would that deflect the pressure on Schwarzenegger to talk about whatever it is his take on the issues may turn out to be?
Well, you know, it's hard to imagine anything deflecting from the celebrity quality of the Schwarzenegger candidate. The thought of Pete Wilson, who was really, you know, during his 8 years as governor, was not Mr. Charisma. The thought of him, but basically, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger has not gone before the media. He has not released public statements. Not that every other candidate has been specific to himself, but the fact is that Pete Wilson has been the public face of Schwarzenegger and allows the Democrats a target.
Now, let's turn to the campaign of Governor Gray Davis. And he is, of course, fighting the recall. That's the first part of the ballot in California. And if he can get 50.1%, what matters on the second half of the ballot doesn't matter. He has contacted former President Bill Clinton and gotten advice from him. What does he hope to get out of former President Clinton?
Well, clearly, you know, this is a state that's run by the Democrats. Every statewide office holder in California is a Democrat, and not many of them want to be seen with Gray Davis, whose popularity is really, really not much in the double digits. But having said that, Bill Clinton, obviously the consoler-in-chief, he went through his own recall election, you could say, in a way, 1998, 99, the impeachment vote, and the House and the vote to convict, which failed in the Senate. So Bill Clinton certainly knows what Gray Davis is going through. Plus the fact that, there's a national theme here for the Democrats, and maybe Bill Clinton brings that in. First of all, Clinton is very popular in California. He won the state overwhelmingly twice in his two runs for president. But also that it reminds voters that this is a Democratic strategy, that Republicans are trying to rob, take away from the democratic process. It's with the recall in California. It was with the disputed election in Florida and with Gore and Bush. It was with Bill Clinton's impeachment. It's with the redistricting in Texas. It's a democratic plan to put in voters' minds, at least, the fact that Republicans are trying to win it at all costs, not at the ballot box.
And, you, of course, President Clinton is probably never going to run for office again, or at least certainly not in the state of California. He doesn't have an awful lot to lose. But do you see anything in Davis's recent strategy that might you might detect the hand of Bill Clinton there?
Well, in the sense that Bill Clinton, when he was under the gun during the Monica Lewinsky impeachment matter, he basically tried to sell himself as doing his job, being president of the United States. And that's what Gray Davis is trying to do now. It's hard to reinvent the wheel, especially with somebody as unpopular as Gray Davis. But Gray Davis is going around signing bills, attending ceremonies, doing the governor thing, as opposed to what he had been doing for 8 years, basically, which has been raising a ton of money, running negative campaigns and negative attacks against his opponents. Gray Davis is trying to be above the fray, and that is very Clinton-esque.
It's the same thing that President Clinton did during the impeachment process.
That's right.
Yeah. We mentioned that Bill Clinton doesn't seem to have an awful lot to lose. Does he have anything to gain?
Well, Bill Clinton seems to be the, first of all, the fact that this California recall has sucked all the oxygen out of the 9 Democrats running for president. Nobody's talking about them anymore. I mean, we're not even talking about Howard Dean, and we were required to talk about Howard Dean every 10 minutes in the previous month or so, but now we don't have to do that anymore, at least until October 7th. The fact is that Bill Clinton seems to be the Democrat that candidates are looking for. Many Democrats, John Edwards running for president, Joe Lieberman, has talked about that they seek Bill Clinton's advice for running for 2004, and Gray Davis certainly could take something from the playbook as well.
Here's an email question from Chris Routman. Due to the press coverage of political figures, we as voters know almost nothing about a candidate other than their sound bites. I would like to see all candidates announce their advisors before an election. That information would garner much more information about probable future policies than anything we see in the press.
Well, that's interesting, but you know, it's also interesting. Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he announced for governor on The Tonight Show, surprised his own advisors. So for all the focus that people are putting on the Pete Wilsons and the Bill Clintons and the George Gortons, who is a Schwarzenegger advisor, he didn't even tell his advisors what he was going to do. So much for the advice he's getting or receiving.
Another celebrated or celebrity campaign, depending on how you want to look at it. Arianna Huffington has hired Dean Barkley, who managed the campaign of a wrestler turned Minnesota governor Jesse Ventura. What does that say about how she hopes to position herself?
Well, Ventura was the non-politician who surprised the experts in winning governorship of Minnesota in 1998. And obviously, Arianna Huffington, like Ventura, is running as an independent, not beholden to special interests of the Democrats or Republicans, and hoping some of that Ventura magic will wear off. Of course, Ventura left office in 2002, 2003 as a very unpopular governor with a rising debt. And basically, Dean Barkley's job, as I see it, is trying to put some space between Arianna Huffington and a camera, which is very difficult to do.
We now have a final candidate count. Have we gotten a look at the final ballot yet, what it's going to look like?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I know I've seen some description of it as a quasi butterfly ballot, because, you know, obviously the purpose of the butterfly ballot in Florida in 2000 was to, because there were so many things on the ballot, to make it as less complicated as possible, but of course it confused so many voters.
And make it compact.
So it'll make it compact. And this, I mean, this would be larvae rather than butterflies here with all these candidates.
And again, the question that everybody's going to have to try to figure out, and all of these advisors are trying to pick out, is how do you distinguish yourself amongst the field if you're not Arnold Schwarzenegger or Arianna Huffington or a couple of other well-known candidates?
Well, the assumption really has to be that only maybe a half a dozen candidates are serious about this. You know, Peter Ueberroth, the former baseball, the Olympics, who brought the Olympics to Los Angeles, the baseball. Tom McClintock, the conservative, obviously conservative like Tom McClintock, and Bill Simon, the 2002 Republican candidate for governor, obviously wanted to point to Schwarzenegger. Look, he's hired Warren Buffett. He's pro-choice on abortion. He's pro-gay rights. He is not a true Republican. Whereas Cruz Bustamante, the Democratic candidate, wants to point to the fact that because of Pete Wilson, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a conservative who do not have the Latino vote interests in mind. In other words, a lot of people are trying to portray, it seems like it's not so much portraying what you against the other candidates, it's how you relate and react to Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he seems to be obviously the flavor this week, if not this month.
We're talking about politics with Ken Rudin, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here are some of the stories NPR News is working on today. President Bush has announced that a key al-Qaeda figure has been arrested in Southeast Asia. The man known as Hambali is the alleged coordinator of the bombing last year in Bali and the most recent bombing of the Marriott Hotel in Jakarta. And the United Nations Security Council approved a resolution today that recognizes a U.S.-appointed Iraqi governing council. Syria, the only Arab country on the council, abstained in that vote. You can hear more on those stories later on All Things Considered from NPR News. And now let's join another guest. The California recall guest race has compressed the calendar campaign to about 2 months. And while that is a sprint by American standards, political operatives elsewhere are used to shorter races. Joining us now to talk about that is Peter DiNolo. He served as communications director for Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. He is now executive vice president for the Strategic Council, a public opinion and strategic planning firm in Canada. And he's with us by phone from his office in Toronto. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Does 2 months seem like a short time for a race in Canadian terms?
No, in fact, Canadian races are considerable. 2 months used to be the standard, and they've been shortened in recent years to about 5 or 6 weeks.
Why are campaigns there shorter?
Well, you know, the reason for long campaigns originally had a lot to do with our massive geography and the fact it took so long to crisscross the country before the age of jet travel. But, I mean, the fact is that Canadians see their politicians strutting their stuff in a question period in our parliamentary system on an ongoing basis. It's part of government. It's the most visible part of government they see. They see both the governors and the opposition. And they have the forms opinions, and they feel that a 5 to 6 week period is enough.
How does having to conduct a campaign in, from our terminology, a relatively short period of time, how does that affect the tactics in a race?
Well, of course, I mean, the problem with a short period is that you could, if you have a setback, you can come back from that, but you can't come back often from a second setback.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have time to, you've seen in some campaigns, losing and winning and losing, but it's tough to come up for a second time. Another example is in Canadian races, the standard is that there be one debate among the political leaders in the campaign. Generally takes place around the midpoint of a 5 to 5 or 6 week campaign, or say 2 weeks before the final election.
But you would think that you know, the stakes in that one debate would be pretty huge.
Tremendous. In fact, there was a provincial election in Quebec just a few months ago in which there was a tremendous tidal wave, turn of popular support by the Liberal leader against the incumbent PQ government based on the debate performance.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that famously in a campaign about 20 years ago in 1984 with where Mr. Mulroney just lambasted Mr. Turner, who was the Liberal leader in mid-campaign in the single English debate. Turner had been leading that campaign, lost his lead, and led the Liberals to their worst defeat in history.
Would it tend to make a candidate more cautious or bolder?
Well, it depends where you are in the at that point in the race. I mean, if you're on the losing end, if you haven't got momentum going with you, you look for that Hail Mary pass in a debate or in other means during the campaign, and you shoot for it. So we saw in the last federal election, the opposition Alliance Party, for example, against the incumbent Liberals, really trying for a lot of Hail Mary passes in the middle of the campaign, saying things that were quite sensational, trying to get some traction, and just wasn't working.
Does a quick race, and again, this is in American terms, not Canadian ones, but does a quick race ever lead to a kind of, you know, buyer's remorse where voters feel they only get to know the candidate after they've elected him?
No, and I think part of that is because they see these politicians strutting their stuff through the course of the calendar year in question period in the provincial legislature or in the National House of Commons. So the leaders, the nominees, if you will, their Canadian equivalent, the political party leaders, aren't unknown quantities who they're only exposed to during a campaign period.
Okay. Ken Rudin, a lot of people here in this country have always said our campaigns are way too long. Maybe this is a case of be careful of what you ask for.
Well, the exact opposite is what happens in this country when usually, at least we've seen in the last several presidential elections, both candidates, both parties have been known so early in advance, March of election year or April, well, certainly in February or March of the election year, you have like 8 months of campaigning that certainly could put a lot of voters to sleep.
Okay. Peter DiNullo, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Peter DiNullo is Executive Vice President of the Strategic Council, a public opinion and strategic planning firm in Canada. He was with us by phone from his office in Toronto. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, was here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much, Ken.
Thank you, Neil.
Ira Flatow is here tomorrow with Science Friday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.